on. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 112. Our top 10 games of 2018. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. We are a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. And for more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me is...
one of your co-hosts, Brian.
Special guest, Larry.
And another co-host, Kathy.
Woo! We are setting our all-time record for four people on the podcast at once. And we are going to present to you some of our top games from this year, 2018. I actually want to start 2018, best of, in 2019, by talking about the revamp at the store, which has kind of been Larry and Brian's thing
Mike,
here.
Mike helped out, too.
And Mike, yeah. There you go. But many people at the store have been helping. But just tell us about what you've been doing at the Portal specifically.
Well, so Larry ended up, I guess you can kind of start off with how we acquired the shelves, right?
Yeah, we have some extra shelving space and we kind of have used it to, I mean, if I was to give a number, I'd say probably expand our shelf space by like maybe a third, give or take, between the back area, the new Star Wars Legion area, and then that other side one, so that games can face more, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I feel like, as you know, we've been doing a really good job of getting a lot of product in the store, but as the shelf space was limited, it's all sideways or it's underneath, and it's hard for, you know, customers to really see what a game looks like. So I think with the added shelf space, we're able to kind of get games more facing frontward, so people can look at them, pick them up more easily, and also kind of create a flow of the store. I mean, there's still other things we've been, you know, kind of knocking around with Mike and others to say, you know, can we do a self-service area? Can we do this? Can we move this over here? But I think overall, a lot of people have come in and felt like it's different. It looks fresh. It's, you know, created some buzz, I think.
Yeah, if you had been down there, you could definitely tell, like, the shelves get very crowded very quickly with so many games coming out. And there are more and more games that we want to try to keep in stock at all points. So it kind of reached a tipping point, you know, not just for customers, but also for, like, the employees trying to find spaces for where, you know, where stuff could go. Like, we were just starting to stack stuff, games on top of other games, and that's just, it didn't look very good. So now, yeah, a couple more rows were added, and like Larry was saying, we've been able to kind of face stuff out so people can see the cover art, and they actually know that the game is there. It's not just kind of reading the spine. And I've had a few people just kind of bring it up and say, oh, look at you, you brought in all these new games, but they were all the ones that were there. It's just
right. No
one really knew that they were there. So,
and I would also say, as part of this, we're constantly adding to our clearance section, and a few things we've added recently have had some hot buzz, like, was that Blood and Plunder? We put that over in that clearance area, and then a few people got excited and picked some stuff up. So, you know, the clearance area is constantly changing, and things are getting added as we go through this. So,
and a demo table. There's a demo table now.
There is a demo table. And I'm going to put this out there. Thursday nights, we're trying something different every night. Every Thursday night, we're going to try something different with the demo table, whether it's a discount on the game we're demoing, whether it's maybe, you know, $5 for people to play and we'll give away some games, maybe a special discount on anyone who plays that night, whatever it is, every night. And I think at some point we're going to talk to Matt about getting that put on Facebook, because I'm not very good on social media. But, you know, and then people can look for that, like, oh, what's going to be this Thursday? Is it a discount on the demo? Is it a, you know, $5 entry, you know, win a couple games? You know, whatever. But
sure.
I think we're going to be working through that on Thursdays and maybe other days, as depending. So
right. And it gives us an opportunity, too, because all the publishers out there want to help. They want to get us stuff that works for the store. But actually having something where we can put it in front of people and really showcase something, that'll be huge, I think. So it's exciting.
Yeah. And so from the podcast end, this is a little different in terms of that, but
I believe I acquired over 60 titles, or we acquired 60 titles for review and demo for the store, and that's in addition to what Brian or Larry or Mike got for demo copies. So demo, if people don't know, come through distribution, we purchase them, review, or people send them to me to review and then put in the library. So eventually they all end up as demo. But we've acquired 60-something games, mostly hot games from this year, which is kind of the important element to me. Now I'm going back in the catalog to find companies. I'm not going to mention anybody because I don't want them to be positive or negative whether they do that. But, like, here's a game we should have on our shelf. Let me see if I can get one that I could review and put there. And in terms of that, something we can't get through distribution. And then Kickstarter games, of course, are the place to look for, you know, what we'll have in terms of that. So.
And the store is kickstarting more games now, and there's more opportunities, you know, as people come in, they can ask about a game that's on Kickstarter, and we can inquire as to whether we're going to back it. And I want to say in the last month and a half, we've probably brought in a dozen or so games that were Kickstarter, give or take. So,
well, you backed
them. Yeah, that we've
read. Yeah. And then,
so.
Yeah.
Cool. So we should talk about 2018. 2018 gaming, otherwise, whichever. Probably mostly gaming. Kath, what did you think about 2018?
I played a lot of games one time in 2018.
Welcome to the club.
I know I sat down with you on your Board Game Geek app, and we went through all the games I played with you that you logged on there.
BG Stats.
That's what it's called.
To be correct.
Yes.
I don't have the Board Game Geek app, but that's
whatever.
Fine. No, I'm just letting people know what it is. And you have BG Stats now.
I just got it so that I can keep track of my own games for 2019. I've got a few in there already. But it was actually kind of fun looking through the app. I could see like chunks of time that I played a bunch of games like, oh, those were all the games that I remember playing all of those at VonnerCon, or those were all the games we played at Dice Tower Con. And that was fun to see them all together like that. So I'm excited to keep my track of my own games this year.
And it wasn't the first year you went to a convention, but it was the first year you left your house to go to a convention.
This is true.
How did you feel about conventions specifically?
And I went to a couple.
Yeah, what'd you go to?
I went to Dice Tower Con, and I went to PAX Unplugged.
There you go.
And VonnerCon. I felt more focused at PAX Unplugged because I wasn't also trying to get work done for my day job and take care of my daughter like I was at Dice Tower Con. So I did enjoy that more, although I think if I'd been able to be as focused, I would have enjoyed Dice Tower Con a lot more.
Nice. What did you gentlemen feel about 2018?
Well, one thing I'll say is I think it was long. As this is the first time I've made a list for a year, and as I was asking you games, and you're like, yeah, that was 2018. I'm like, I feel like I played that 2 years ago. So I almost feel like we need a mid-year list and replay, you know, replay some games to kind of help. I don't know how the people do it every year, make this
list.
Best of
November 2018, week two.
Right, exactly. But I want to echo what Kathy said. This year I'm making a commitment. I play way too many games once.
Yeah.
And I've done it recently where I'll just play a game back to back now. And we did that the other night. I love that game. I'm going to forget the name.
Kashgar.
Let's play it again. I know we just played, but let's play it again just so we have two plays in.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to do that more. I actually made four lists for 2019 as far as 10x10s and whatever. And I'm really focused on playing games multiple times. And maybe that means less one-offs, but still a bunch of new games. But I think 2018 was great, but I got to tell you, the conventions, I know, Kathy, this was your first time, they're getting really big, like really big, and I'm just curious what that looks like in the next few years as far as space and tickets being sold out or doing things differently. Like at PAX this year, they had a security check that was a disaster at times, you know, and I'm thinking Gen Con doesn't have that, and they're three times as big, you know, so just interesting seeing how big these conventions are getting and how cumbersome it might become in some of these cities. So I look forward to seeing what 2019 brings.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hadn't looked through. I just kind of looked through what I had for plays, and it looks like my total play count was down a bit, but more like a wider variety of games. So I guess kind of in that same vein of a lot of games, very limited number of times. But it was good. I think for me, it's kind of hitting that saturation point of, well, there just that there's so many games out there. I know it's kind of, I'm sure it's been hitting that point for a while now, but I feel like this year I've noticed a lot more that I'm willing to just play once and not want to get back to the table. So it's been easier for me to just kind of say, this is not my type of game. This is not for me. I'm ready to move on and try something new. But the ones that do take hold, like I want to keep, you know, keep trying those ones out. And, you know, it's rewarding to find a game that's really, really fun and really enjoyable that... You know, I did notice a lot in my list, too, when we get to that. But, you know, it was good to kind of take the year as a whole and kind of look through all that, kind of filter out what was at the top for me. So, yeah.
So, for me, in 2018, I played 359 games, 238 were unique, and 214 were new games. And that doesn't include VonnerCon, because of hosting duties I did not track in my app. It doesn't include, like, KeyForge. Well, I wonder if KeyForge is in there once. Or, like, anything that was really brief. So, demos that I might have played at places. So, like, I know I played Jetpack Joyride. I demoed that with Zephra at Dice Tower Con. I didn't put that in here because, you know, when I'm going around with her. So, I'm probably closer to, like, 230, I would say. New game. So, that's actually down from last year where it was almost 300. But I definitely played a lot in terms of that. And I really overall enjoyed to it to 2018. I had 22 games on my list for best of and narrowed it down to 10. So that felt like, but these were like 22 great or amazing games. So that seems, you know, like a pretty good year overall. Just in terms of store and or me wise, because I kind of do both on here. Things I did this year, I went to Conclave, which is hosted by the guys from... Cardboard Jungle, Anthony Ricano specifically, so I went to that this year. So actually, funny enough, I went to Dice Tower Con with Kathy and Zephra, I went to Gen Con with Brian and Larry, and I went to PAX Unplugged with Larry and Kathy, so kind of went to all the different ones. We had two 24-hour events at the store. One, the first one we had was the tabletop, and we had a bunch of people there. We kind of had our standards like Gary and Jason, no offense to them, Jen, they're local board game media people, so they're at those. I don't mean to blow over them, but they're at almost all those. But also Eric Summer came to that, and Rob Davio and his wife came to that as well. So that was really fun. The second 24-hour event Gary and Harrison did with us, and did the charity event, and that went off really, really well. So we did that. We had Steve Finn come up to the store. Dr. Finn from Dr. Finn's Games came and played at the store with us. And then, of course, on my end, just VonnerCon was probably its biggest and best this year. So those were all the things. So overall, 2018 was really good on that front. But we should jump into our top 10 games because it's going to take us a while. So Brian and Larry and I are going to give you our top 10 games. Kathy's not a fan of putting things in order. And as she said, she played a lot of things once. So I don't mean to speak for you.
It's fine. I cannot ever decide my favorite anything. So I am going to mention just a few of the games. As I said, I went through Brant's BG Stats app, what I played with him on there. So we went through all of them, and the ones that stood out and I said, oh yeah, I really liked that game, I'll give a mention to.
There you go.
Briefly.
All right, so we'll jump in. We don't know each other's lists, so we may say each other's games, in which case we won't do the Dice Tower thing where we say, oh, that's higher on somebody's list, we'll just talk about it. And you could jump in or not, whichever we want to do that.
Are we allowed to disagree with your list?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good.
I already disagree with your list. All right, I'll kick it off. My number 10 game of 2018, kind of interesting game. I'm going to do the Sam Healy and explain the game a lot before I say the game. But my My number 10 game was something I played very specifically with Kathy, and we really, really enjoyed this in the middle of the experience. The ending was a little bit of a downer, and it's one of those things where it's over now because it's a legacy game. So this is Rise of Queensdale, and this is a Euro legacy game, and we played it like on our 10-year anniversary. And we played a lot of it. We played like 7-8 games while we were away. And it was really, really good. And just at the tail end of it, it kind of plays out with a phase 10 mechanism. So you either move on to the next round or you don't if you don't complete your objective. But it was great because at the end we were both on the final objective and all that. Like, all that was fine. But the ending story wasn't really. It was just... And peace comes to the land, or whatever. Sorry, spoiler. I didn't really give any specifics. So I really liked it in the beginning. I really, really liked it in the middle. And the ending was just kind of ho-hum. But I look back, the experience was so much fun. Like, we enjoyed it. We thought about it. Like, we're out eating dinner, and we're like, we get home, we should play that, you know? Or even on weeknights, we set it up to play a game or two and left it out on our table to finish it. So when I look back on that, had to go on the top 10, Rise of Queensdale.
Yeah, it was also on my list as well. And it was maybe my favorite. I know I don't do favorites, but I really, really did enjoy it. And I liked the legacy aspect of it a lot. There was some really cool stuff in there. It was fun. Rise of Queensdale was designed by Inca Brand and Marcus Brand, art by Fiori GmbH, and Michael Menzel, publisher Ilya Ravensburger.
All right. sorry. That was, my number 10 is one that I actually tried out at Gen Con for the first time. So Expansity was a very pleasant surprise. I think it just works really well. It's got a good table presence. Just a really fun city building game where, you know, like I just really enjoyed it. So it snuck in there. I know it was kind of, it's at the 10 spot, but it's really, there weren't very many games that were kind of on that short list beyond this, but yeah, that's what I'm putting as my 10.
Locally designed.
Yeah. So we'll have to figure out.
Alex Cutler, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So. Kathy's going to tell us.
I will. I did enjoy really Expansity a lot. It was in my realm of thinking on the list. So it
may or may not be. I'm going to go through my other games as well. But yeah, no, Expansity was good.
Yeah. Expansity was designed by Alex Cutler, artist Cohen Pohl, publisher Breaking Games.
All right, I'm going to go right out with it because you guys are mixing it up a little bit. So my number 10 game, Carson City, the card game.
No!
Shocker!
King Domino for adults.
So, and again, that game is based off a board game that's pretty high on my list that, God, we played for the first time 3 years ago, I think, at the store. And I've played it a lot since then. Love the theme. The card game really, for me, makes me feel like I'm playing a quicker, easier version of the board game. So I get that feel out of the way. And it does have a little King Domino feel, which isn't a bad thing. It did win a spiel, and I think I've played King
There's
Domino
no
40
gun
times.
There's no gunfights.
It's okay.
How do you have Carson City without gunfights?
It's okay. You still have bandits and negative points, so that, you know.
That's true.
But the 10 spot was tough for me. I had a lot of games fighting for that spot, and at the end, Carson City, I've played it enough, and I like the theme enough, and I like playing it the right way, unlike the wrong way that we were taught at Gen Con by the demoers.
Would have been top 10 with the wrong rules.
No, the wrong rules were terrible. I mean, I still enjoyed it because it was Carson City, but oh, the wrong rules were bad. So that's my number 10, Carson City, the card game.
Carson City Card Game was designed by Xavier George, artist Alexandra Roche, publisher Queened Games.
All right, my number 9 starts down my long road of games I loved that were not popular this year. And this was the year where I felt the most rogue that I ever have in terms of that. But this was a game that we played. I'm just going to say, the game is called Catalyst, and it's a little filler card game. And it was like one of these ones where I go crazy with the Gen Con prep. You guys know, like, I'm figuring out everything. And I see, and this one Catalyst game, this game not from Catalyst, we saw the cover. And everybody's like, oh, that cover looks really cool. and nobody knew anything about the game. And I meant to track it down at Gen Con, and it was your buddy Chris, I think on day one, who tracked it down, had played it and bought it. And he taught it to us, and I was immediately hooked to that game. I picked up a copy the next day. I brought it home. I have taught it to everybody I could. I really like the game. I still really like the game, but it definitely is in that one where I teach it people, and they're like, that was fun. I don't know if I'd play again, but I had a good... I'm like, no, it was so good! But I still have enjoyed it. I've been on people... I don't think anybody's like, oh, I don't want to play that. It's bad. But nobody has seemed to catch on to it as much as I have, but...
What about Brian? Would he play it again?
I'd play it again.
Oh, nice. Well, there you go.
One of the lists.
Oh, sweet. but yeah, so I really like the game. I just think it's really neat. Everything's moving down the line. It keeps the cards moving. Definitely a filler-style game. I mean, it might run 40, 45 minutes. But I just love, like, you try to make explosive combos, and then that's it. And that's what you're trying to do because your cards get moved to the side. But that is Catalyst... my number nine game.
Catalyst was designed by Martino Chiacchiera, Roberto Corbelli, David Fromark, Per Abrahamson, Sergio Rossini, artist Jan Tirsaran, publisher D.V. Giochi.
Thank you. I'm going to jump in front of, because I don't want to go last every time, so I'm going to mix it up a little bit here. So I'm going to jump in. This number nine game for me broke some rules for me, because it was a Kickstarter game that I did not kickstart, but then I bought it retail without having everything, which is... people that don't know me, that weighs heavy on my conscience.
You can buy games retail?
Yeah, of course. But
you acquired everything after?
Not yet, but I'm going to work on it. But I really like this game, Lords of Hellas. The models look cool. There's not a lot of models, but the ones that they have that are temples look really neat. Three alternate ways to win the game, which I like. I enjoy... I'll call it area control, dudes on a map. This kind of did a different version of that with fighting monsters and building shrines and temples. I really enjoyed it. I like the look of it. The kids liked it. Luke snuck in a victory one time when we played. I've got a couple other games of it in. Haven't played it as much as I'd like, but Lords of Hellas, my number nine.
Lords of Hellas was designed by Adam Kopinski, artist Piotr Gasek, publisher Awaken Realms.
My number nine is actually, is this the only one? I don't know. Brent taught it to me, first off, and it was wrong the way we played it. next time I played, Larry and I actually hopped in and played that, and it definitely boosted it up with the correct rules. But Caper is my number nine. Solid two-player game that just has a lot of fun, like, drafting that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect from a two-player, you know, head-to-head game. So that's in there, number nine, and that was really solid. I enjoyed that a lot.
I would also mention it has surprisingly enjoyable art.
Yeah.
Even though it's not that overdone art.
It's
that
cool.
Simple. I like the look of it, too.
Yeah. I just want to mention that I didn't teach the entire thing wrong. It does change the game, but I taught, like, you get five cards and you draft five, and you're supposed to draft four instead of five.
So you toss one card. The flow of the game was right.
Yeah.
But we played more of the game than we should.
Right, and that does change. I'm not saying, but like, it wasn't like I missed all the rules in the game.
Right, it wasn't
just key rules.
It's interesting. I forgot that was an 18 game because that would have been in my thinking. I like Caper. That's a good choice, Brian.
Yeah. You can't change now. This is it. No looking back.
Oh, but that was a good surprise choice.
Caper was designed by Unai Rubio, artist Josh Emmerich, publisher Keymaster Games.
Number eight, I'm going to jump in again and keep messing with you. Now, this game, I love this game. I love it, and I love when people hate it, and I like when people love it. I learned it recently, and this is the tough part about a year being so long with so many games, right? I played this more recently. So it definitely sticks for me. But The Estates has got to be the best auction game I've ever played. Absolutely love it. It will definitely make my overall top 100 or whatever list someday we'll do. You know, it's one of the games that's definitely going to make its way onto my overall list. It's going to stay in my collection. Taught it to a bunch of people. Some people don't get the meanness of the game right away, which is okay.
Yeah.
But once they do, it's awesome. once they realize, like, ooh, I can bid for this even though I don't want it.
Yeah.
And I could throw the piece away, as long as it's not a building, of course. But, yeah, no, I love it. So that's my number eight, the Estates. Hoping I get a duplication on that game, but we'll see.
Or lists.
Well, I know it's not going to happen with you, Brian.
I don't think I've played the new version.
Oh,
I would have put it on there.
You've never played the Estates?
I haven't played it as the Estates.
We should play the Estates and then redo it.
Yes. Oh, wow. I'm surprised you haven't played the Estates.
It had like a ton going. Like, it was played at the Extra Life event a lot, yeah, right? And like right around there. But I was kind of, yeah, I just missed out. And
I think I played it four times at the Extra Life
event. Yeah. Oh, no.
The Estates was designed by Klaus Zuck, artist Don Van Paradon, Tejas Van Paradon, publisher Capstone Games.
Alright, so my next game is another two-player game, but this one's from Fantasy Flight. Keyforge, I know it's relatively early. I don't know how, like, this one feels like it could fluctuate a bit on my list as, like, as time goes on. But I was, at first I was kind of thinking this was going to be a gimmick that wouldn't be all that fun. But once you actually play it and have to, like, think through the story, like, there are good decisions to be made in Keyforge. So I'm glad that it's got a lot of support behind it and people are playing it pretty frequently. So that's my number eight.
I'm going to put Keyforge on my list, too, because I really like it.
And maybe we'll see it somewhere else.
Maybe.
Who can say? Keyforge was designed by Richard Garfield and published by Fantasy Flight Games.
And that was, by the way, the easiest one Kathy will have to do all night.
That's right.
I spent a good long time researching pronunciation of names for this, and I'm probably still butchering them. So,
my number eight is from a dear friend of ours who has a name like this to our store and podcast, Ignacy Trebicek and Portal Games, and this is Detective, a Modern Crime Board Game. So this is not a legacy game, but it's definitely a story arc game. And so Detective, a Modern Crime Board Game, I was on Every Night is Game Night with Jason Perez to talk about this game and Chronicles of Crime. And he kind of negatively said, oh, it's Homework the Board Game. And I was like, yeah, it's awesome. And I discovered that people don't like to do homework. They didn't find that interesting. But Kathy and I found it awesome. We had a blast. So in Detective, you are trying to solve a case. I mean, kind of like an escape room or whatever, but it's really a story. You're trying to solve a story. But to do it, you have to log into a web page, you have to search the internet, you have to use Google Maps, read through items that you open, like court cases and files and all sorts of things. And then in the game, each mission is very simply a stack of like 36 cards, and you just draw these cards, they're called leads. Now, where the game takes a little bit of license is every lead will bring you to something. Which sounds bad from a thematic standpoint, but it's great from a game standpoint because you just have options and they're all good. It's just which one will you like better or relate to the things that you're trying to figure out. The weird thing with the case is you cannot get a perfect score, which I think would bother a lot of people. Like, they say that in there because there are negative penalties for things, so there's no way to actually get a perfect score on each one. And I know that second mission drove some people crazy because it pretty much is grasping at straws. You got three ways you can go and you have to guess, and we did, so we're awesome. But we actually stalled on a little bit. We played three of the five, and we definitely need to finish it because all five stories arc together to create one, and it ramps up wonderfully. I had a total blast with this game. 3 hours a mission. We must have 20 sheets that we've covered, sometimes front and back, and all sorts of stuff. We laid it all out. We have, like, maps, those, like, mind maps of who's connected to who and everything. And absolutely love the game. Chronicles of Crime is fun. It's a great game. It's almost like a beer and pretzels game to me. But Detective, a Modern Crime, I can't wait for the L.A. Noir expansion this year. And y'all gotta play it.
Detective, a modern crime board game, was designed by Shemislav Reimer, Ignacy Shrevicek, and Jacob Lapot. That's probably not right. Artist Ega Jamikciak, Eva Kostors, and Rafael Sizma. Publisher, Portal Games. Sorry to all of those people.
Alright. So next up, where are we at? We're at
number seven.
So the Quacks of Quedlinburg is on there for me. another one that I got to try out at Gen Con. I was looking through, a surprising amount of these are Gen Con plays or releases, but this was one that was kind of, we tried one for the vendor time, like before the actual show opened up, and I'm so glad we got to play it there, and just getting it out, like it came out to retail relatively recently, but it's just one that's got a very fun push your luck dynamic to it, and I've just had a blast every time I've been playing that one. So the Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Yeah, it's a good amount of variability. We played that at PAX Unplugged. Yeah,
I like it. I like it a lot. The name is interesting, but the game is good.
Yeah, I hope so. It's on my list.
Yeah, it was Quacksalber Die Quedlinburg.
Like, yeah, the Quacks is a little easier.
Yeah, so they just changed it. Quacks. Yeah, it's supposed to be the snake oil salesman is the idea, you know.
The Quacks of Quedlinburg was designed by Wolfgang Warsch, artist Dennis Slohausen and Wolfgang Warsch, publisher Schmidt Spiel.
Also, quick jump in, that won the Kenner Spiel des Jahres this year. So that was the what do they call that, advanced strategy game or strategy game or connoisseur's strategy game, something like that.
I find interesting that game would be at the advanced level comparatively to...
Right.
You know,
yeah. Well, I mean, they're
heavier games.
Yeah, they're jumping.
Used to.
They're jumping to medium. They're not really going to heavy. Yeah. Cool. My
you know
number.
Go. I'm gonna throw in a game because I haven't in a while.
Definitely.
I played this game at PAX, and it is Reichholt. It's an Uwe Rosenberg game, and I really liked it. I am a sucker for pretty art. And this game is really very pretty. The cover actually is what drew me in to make me want to play it to begin with. And I like Uwe Rosenberg games. And I enjoyed it a lot. It reminded me of Agricola without the really super annoying people feeding.
Oh, they're saying playing with. Yeah. Well, the feeding is the score mechanism in this game,
yeah,
which is
that's
really nice.
Cool.
This game, the score mechanism is where this game is at.
It's very different.
In fact, if you took the action selection from Wendake and put it with that score mechanism, I think you'd have an amazing game. Because those are two like mechanisms from this year that I think are really good. But what happens is there's a track of tables around the board. You have people coming over and you have to feed your guests. And so it goes in order. It's like you need a tomato, a carrot, a mushroom, help me out,
lettuce, cauliflower. Yeah.
And then you need two tomatoes, two carrots, four, five, six. And so you have to collect resources by harvesting in your greenhouses.
Mm-hmm. Are you only feeding small animals? Or
that's right.
People
yeah.
eating these meals.
And then you take turns moving up on the table, and whoever gets the farthest after like eight rounds wins. But the really clever part of it is not only that, but it's you can pick one spot and you collect the resources on that space instead of spend them. So you don't have to collect one resource as you're moving up. You can receive them. And that's awesome because it makes it so you can always move up, and also you can be really clever in how you don't have to harvest everything.
Yeah.
So it makes you spread out but not completely. So that was really neat.
So, yeah, that's Reichholt, designed by Uwe Rosenberg, artist Clemens Franz and Lucas Siegmann, publisher Frosted Games.
Are we on seven?
This is seven, yeah.
Cool. Mine is Teotihuacan. Is that City of the Gods? Might be the tagline?
Yes.
Cool. So Teotihuacan's the spiritual successor to Dzogchen, the Mayan calendar. And it's just a really cool game. It seems very replayable. I actually, Dzogchen messes with my brain a little bit, like not in a good way. And like, I like it and I get frustrated at some point and kind of just give up and just score points. as opposed to like, yeah, I'm going to stick with it all the way. This game doesn't do that. I stick with this game the whole way. Just lots of clever things from gaining cacao to spending cacao to landing on places with other people's dice to locking your dice in. Just lots of little mechanisms, but the game is so smooth and that it's not an exploding die, but it's like whatever that is where your people level. I remember that all the way back on some game that I made Brian track down and then it ended up not being good. But like I like that where your workers kind of level as you go. The three player seems fine. We just put a little bit of dice. The two player, we put a bunch of dice out, is not really clever. It works, but it's not really clever. It would be nice to see them beef up the two player a little bit. Like, I think it plays and it works. Interesting. And I actually haven't played where we switch everything around, but I think you guys have. I have a feeling it's on your list, so I'm going to let you talk about it when we get there. But that is Teotihuacan.
Teotihuacan was designed by Danielle Tashini and David Terzi, artist Odysseus Damoglau, publisher NSKN Games.
And my number seven is the first duplicate game, Keyforge. And I also had trouble figuring out where it was on this list, and I knew it was on the list, but it fluctuated.
Yeah.
Again, I thought it was a great gimmick, and like you, I'm like, is it just a gimmick? Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's a great game. Like, I enjoy it. I just don't play it enough because it's just, there's so much to play. And sometimes those two-player card games are just hard to get to the table. But love it. Great game. And an easy job for Kathy on Keyforge.
Do you have all the variations?
I think I have 30 out of 36. So I'm getting there as far as the variations of deck combos. I have plenty to trade away.
Nice. Is that everybody's
seven? That's everybody's seven.
I don't think you need to repeat.
I'm not going to repeat all the...
All right, number six for me for 2018 is Heroes of Terranoth. So Heroes of Terranoth is a cooperative.
You said I disagree at some point.
Right? No, it's fine. It's a cooperative dungeon crawling game, I guess. It's really a card game. And this scratches two itches for me. Lord of the Rings, LCG, which I don't know if we're ever going to get that back to the table, even though it is one of my favorite games of all time, and Gloomhaven. So it has the, like, clever card play of Gloomhaven, and it has the, like, adventuring of Lord of the Rings, LCG. I don't think there's any doubt. Like, they do the whole put tokens on the locations to move to the next. I did realize, Brian, and nope. Larry and Kathy, when I played with you, I missed a somewhat major rule. I was trying to think back to ours, but it's all enemies in the shadows get discarded when you travel. And I think that would have been a big deal on our very first round of play. I think after that, we didn't have anything in the shadows, so it was just that first round, but we would have been dealing with a little bit extra enemies. I'd say that's the one negative of the game, is it just throws so many enemies at you and tries to make you defend them and complete your goal. And you can get lost in the chaos of combat. But Lord of the Rings LCG definitely does the same thing. It definitely does that where it just wants you to defend everything. It doesn't want you to kill everything. Mm-hmm. And but I really like Heroes of Terranoth. This game, like, for a while I was not really solo gaming. And I really, really enjoyed solo gaming, playing this. And there's just lots of variability. They added some things from Warhammer Quest, like you have three characters in each one, and each character has two advanced classes, so that gives you a good amount of replayability. They streamline it down. The dice are almost auto-hit, which is some people's complaint, but I love that, because it just, what you like, you're going to be able to predict things, but not perfectly, and you may gain some bonuses, but it's not just hit or miss. So, really enjoyed Heroes of Terranoth, probably mostly for solo play. Not that I enjoyed playing with other people. But that was my number six.
Heroes of Terranoth was designed by Bradley Sadler and Adam Sadler. Art by Sebastian Kosener. Publisher, Fantasy Flight Games.
My number six breaks my rules a little bit. It's the only game on my list I only played once. Oh. But I did play it at Gen Con, and I forgot about it. Till Brant reminded me of the game, explained it to me, and I said, oh yeah, I really like that game, and then I bought it. So, only played once, but Coimbra is my number six. Played at Gen Con, really thought back, enjoyed it. I had to look at the back of the box to remember the little dice castles that we use to you know, put our dice in. And thinking back on that, I do like games that use dice creatively, not just like pure luck dice rolling, but, you know, dice rolling, manipulation, and drafting. I really liked Coimbra. Now that I bought it, I'm excited to sleeve it, do everything else fun to it, and get it ready to hit the table. I think it's going to be on my 10 list. Oh, the nice. Fifth one I'm making for 2019.
So, Coimbra.
Coimbra. See, this is why Kathy has that job of finding it. I see Coimbra.
Coimbra.
How many more rules are you going to break on your list?
That's the biggest one.
Oh, okay.
I only played the game once. Usually you want to play games more than once, but...
Coimbra was designed by Flaminia Brassini and Virginio Gigli. Artist by Chris Williams. Publisher Eggertspiel.
There's a lot of languages there.
Yeah, that was a lot of languages.
Alright, my number six was one that I definitely regretted not picking up at Gen Con, just because of the timing of the release. It's finally at retail now, but it is Good Critters. I know it's kind of a re-release of something else, but I had a blast with it again. It was just so fun to play this. What are you looking at me like that? You didn't expect that on the list?
No, I love Good Critters. I had no idea you would like a game like that.
No, that's I love he does like that. So it's just fun to play the table and do whatever. It's not like a stressful sort of divvied up and lie and do all this stuff. It's just kind of a bluffing game. You know, I love Skull. It's kind of in that same category to me. But Good Critters is my number six.
It's a good example of a game to me where I'm almost happy to make a really exciting round, a memorable round, over winning the game.
Right.
Like, oh, if I can make something memorable happen in the game, I'll be just as happy as if I won. Like,
no one voted no, and I was able to get away with this, or...
Which
this,
I did the last
everyone
time.
Everyone robbed one person who had a defense.
Good Critters is designed by Fabian Zimmerman, artist Valerio Buonfantino, and Stephen Gibson, publisher Arcane Wonders.
My number five, I'm pretty sure, is on no one else's list. Breaks no rules.
It's a 2011 release.
Love this game, love the theme. I waited for this game to come out. This was a game I kickstarted. When it came out, played it right away, played it.
Does it have marbles?
Does not have marbles. I did not kickstart any games with marbles. My number five is Western Legends. And the open sandbox feel of this game that turns many people off, I love. I love that I could play Doc Holliday and try to gamble a lot and maybe go mine and go back and forth. Or can play a bandit who's going to rob some cattle and, you know, go rob the bank and maybe steal from a player. And I thought the card combat system was created. It's not crazy. It's not, I play this card, then you play that card, and then this. Simple. High card wins, and you can play a card that can't. You know, I really like that that mechanism. And it looks nice. The theme is great. It's not pasted on. Like, I don't feel this could be any other game. You know, so... Western Legends. I don't know if you guys have played it even, but that is my number five.
I played it with you at VonnerCon.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm
bad. I'm waiting for the Marvel expansion.
Nice.
I'm actually going to mention another game so I can make sure I get all mine in here. This is a kind of silly one to mention, but when Brant talked about it, I was like, no, I like that game. I don't know why I feel silly, but it's Drop It. So this game, there's a
plastic shield.
It's like Connect Four almost, but it doesn't have the columns. It's just an open space, and you have different shaped pieces, and you have to put them in, but they can't touch any of the same color or the same shape, and there's different points for different things, and it was one that I was like, yeah, I'll try it. And then I was like, oh, that was really fun. I liked it. So it's very dexterity, like, fun. I liked it.
Yeah, this one's actually reminding me of events that I missed from our list earlier, which is we did the, like, United Way, or it was...
Oh, yeah, the...
where were the what's the airplane engine place? Pratt and Whitney. They were from the United Way Pratt and Whitney like division. They came and played. This game was popular there. And then we did the night for DevOps in Hartford, and this game was really popular there. I forgot about those two events that we did this year as well.
Yeah, and I think we had seen this one. I remember this at New York Toy Fair too, and it was one. It didn't jump out to me then, but after it did come out, it's been just a solid game to kind of get in front of people and have them play. So
yeah, I don't remember seeing it. We were so obsessed with the exit games, what was coming out.
Yeah,
we were at Tames and Cosmos. We didn't pay attention to this one. Nice.
So Drop It was designed by Bernard Locke and Uwe Rapp, publisher Cosmos.
Did you mention the Western Legends?
Did I? Did I not? No, I
didn't.
Nobody wants to play
that
game.
But I need to tell you that Western Legends was designed by Hervé Lemaître, and the art was done by Roland MacDonald, publisher Colossal Games. Sorry, Western Legends.
I just want to say that I think that the art in Western Legends was pretty good. And it stops there. All right, my number five is pronounced Coimbra. And yeah, I really like this game. This was kind of the game that I like hounded and focused on at Dice Tower Con. Kathy and I were there, and there were a couple times that I think I went over in the morning and tried to like get to the copy because there was one that was on the table. I don't even think they had one in the library. And so it was, you had to get to it. They had them all laid out. It was awesome. So I went over early in the morning and like stalked the table till the group that was playing it finished, and then sat down and got to play with the group. And I didn't even finish that game because people had to go places, but I totally had it. You know, you play a round or two of that game. It's so good. I love dice drafting. I love all the clever card play, the points. You see where the game's going. They iterate everything out. The production is really nice. I don't know if the art is like amazing. It's kind of simple, but the production overall I think is great. Only thing this game needs is a little expansion that includes more cards, because the cards are static. They get shuffled through the rows, but they could have a few more cards. And it's missing that awesome mechanism where once everybody drafts a die and there's one left over, the remaining die should do something. Even if it's not major, they should just have a little expansion where maybe it's cards that say this is what it's going to do, like Quetzalcoatl has the cards every round. Oh, the remaining die is going to do the following. Perfect. I think that would make the game awesome. My number five. I don't think we have to mention them when they've already...
I already told you the designer.
So my number five is a little bit on the lighter side, but another game where if you have a fun turn, like just one turn can kind of make it enjoyable even if you don't win the whole game. And there is going to be an expansion coming out that I'm looking forward to. And this game is Space Base. So that's just, I don't know, that's one of those ones that it's worked for different groups that I've played with, and I love trying something new every time I play and just hoping for the dice to roll my way. So
you play?
Oh, that was a no. It was a head
nod. I wasn't sure if mine was quiet. Only thing for Space Base is it goes to five, and I would really not play it with five. I don't like it with five. I really, really like it with three.
Yeah, three's good.
Four and five is kind of like, I'm good.
And that's an interesting, I'll call it, dilemma with games, because like a lot of play groups are five. So I look for games that play five, but then most of those games play better at three or four.
you would so go crazy in Space Base if you didn't have people playing like, roll the dice, pick your thing, draft, go. Roll the dice. If you got a group that slowed down, I think that would really bother you, because that game can move, and I think it would be fine, but if you don't have five players that can keep that game moving, you're going to be like, dang it, it's not my turn yet. Like, even though you're interactive on other people's turns, it can be a long time to get around.
Space Base was designed by John D. Clare, artist Chris Walton, publisher Alderac Entertainment Group.
All right, my number four. Yes?
I'm going to talk about one. I'm going to talk about Passing Through Petra.
Ah. Passing Through Petra.
This we played pretty recently. I really liked it. It was a little bit fiddly. There are like a lot of tiles that you have to maneuver around, but it was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Another game that I'm recognizing this is a theme for me this year. A mechanism in the game that's really clever, but I'd like the game, like the overall package to be, or more or that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely had some clever where you push and then the markets move and everything.
You did a lot of tile sliding.
Petra is Indiana Jones and the Temple of... Nope. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It's where they go. Like, they actually filmed at Petra, so it's that, like, mountain passage to the thing. So they created that mountain passage there.
It's true.
Another one from the Floodgate of Renegade this year, which Kathy's about to tell us.
I'm about to tell you, yeah. this one is designed by J. Alex Kevern, artist Jeff Oglesby, Janie Orban, Gene... Oh, no, it's off the side of my page. Sorry. Gene... Torres, and publisher is Renegade Game Studios.
So, Brandon, as you go to your number four, I'm going to predict now four and below, we're going to have a lot of duplication. And yeah. I think we might even duplicate number four.
Well, number...
I'm just predicting. I don't know.
Number four, I'm going to call Fantasy's Unique Garfield. Because I'm naming it with a unique name.
And that's appropriate.
Yes, it's this Keyforge. Keyforge, it was that talk, like we recorded our podcast on the way home from Gen Con, and when we paused to change the batteries, we had a 45-minute conversation about Keyforge, and I was jazzed up since then. And I've gone into this game, and the key for me with Keyforge being successful is that Kathy likes it. And so, like, I bought us two decks for her, well, I bought her two decks for her stocking, and we get them, and we play them against each other and mix and match, and that casual play of Keyforge, like, the cool thing is, like, I don't want it to expand. I don't want to have 17 boxes of Keyforge. I want to have, you know, I'll buy more decks and maybe pass some through or whatever, but have 12 decks, 15 decks, and then just play them against each other. I think that's great, but not much more to say, but yeah, it's so good. I love Keyforge. I'll play it anytime.
So that's the first game on all three lists.
Four.
That's right.
Did you have it on yours?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Keyforge.
Nice.
That's my number four.
yeah, my number four is also has been mentioned by Brant. So this is Teotihuacan. I do need to get my copy back though, Phil, at some point. So I don't know. I need
definitely thought that was aimed at me, and I was like, woohoo! What's
no, you're in the clear. But yeah, I want to play this again. It could fluctuate a little bit, but I think it's. You know, it's just so tough between a few of the games at the top of the list. I think this has kind of settled in there. I was really excited about it, and I don't know if it just... It was a little... I don't know, it kind of met the expectations, but it didn't, like, you know, surpass them, like, by leaps and bounds. But it's an awesome game, and again, it needs to hit the table soon.
Well, that's nice. Right. We're not saying anything about it because...
We said it. Yeah,
it's been said.
So my number four game, which has not been mentioned yet, but I predict will be...
Does it have marbles?
Does not have marbles. It has a lot of wooden pieces. And it takes place in a wooded forest fantasy land. And that is Root. And I really, really liked Root. And it took that other game, which...
Vast,
which had a neat concept but was way too cumbersome to teach new people and all that. Like, this one has that but streamlined. Like, hey, I'm different than you, you know, as the bandit or as the, you know, the Woodland Alliance is different than the crows, whatever. Love the game, love the art, wish I can get my hands on the expansion because I don't have that yet. Hopefully that gets out to retail soon, but Root, excellent game. I won't talk too much because I have a feeling we'll have a further discussion on it later.
Root was designed by Cole Verley, artist Kyle Farron, publisher Leader Games.
So Cole is actually American, and it's Cole Verley.
Oh my, you were really close, goodness.
And you met him at PAX Unplugged.
Sorry,
just to throw you under the bus a little bit.
Whirly it is.
Cole, if you listen, I want a stuffed raccoon.
And I'm going to use this opportunity to say Root will be Brant's number one. That's my prediction.
And my number three.
Let's talk about number three.
Or two. So, yeah, number three, Root for me.
Oh!
So, yeah, I don't know. We can wait for Brant to...
How about if I say number three, Root? I will say something about Root. So... 6-player I don't think works. In Root, I think you really would have to have 6 people that like knew their factions. I do think that the Lizard Cult sucks. They're bad.
I'm glad I played that one.
But, yeah. But if, at some point, whatever it is, BGG, they've changed the factions. They've balanced them a little bit more. It does seem like the Woodland Alliance is winning more often than not, which is what people were seeing. So they're balancing all that. I don't know. I'm going to have first edition copy. They're going to make a second edition and balance some of these things. Yeah. They're pretty simple balances. So it doesn't feel like a game to me where it's like, oh, no. It almost reminds me way back in the day, Axis and Allies, where the Allies win more often. So you gave the Axis starting bonuses, and I like memorized them instantaneously. The solo's okay. It's not super interesting. 2-player can be good with the right factions. But 4-player out of that box is an amazing experience. And I would mostly always throw in the what's the swimming otters, the river folk. I think they're good, which is cool. The expansion's called River Folk because it lets you know those are the good ones in the box. In the expansion, the 3-player game we played was a little wonky that time, but that's just going to happen in any of these games where you try to be so asymmetrical. But I will also say that I gave Root a 10 out of 10 when I was on another podcast. That was actually Every Night Is Game Night Again. And I gave it a 10 out of 10. So what does that say about my 2 and my 1? It means they're 11s out of 10.
I feel like I should mention, too, that I have only played Root one time with 2 players.
And you slaughtered me.
I did.
Did you have fun?
I think so, but I feel like that's one I need to play again to
decide how I feel about it. This is where you need to stretch yourself to 3 and 4 players.
Yeah, I feel like this one, I don't normally like lots of players, but I feel like another player or two I would be willing to try.
I also can speak again for the components of this game. I soaked this game in a beer, and it is okay. Cards and everything.
Awesome.
Unintentional.
I wasn't sure where he was going with this. Like, yeah, the pieces still stood up straight.
So we need your number 3.
Yes. My number 3, I guarantee you, is on no one else's list.
I guarantee you it doesn't have marbles.
Guarantee you. Interesting story about this game. I spent this was a big Kickstarter. But I spent a stupid amount of money on an insert and a wooden box to hold this game in. So I don't know if that gives it away, but my number 3 is Rising Sun. And I almost forgot this was a 2018
game.
I used to love Blood Rage, still love Blood Rage. Rising Sun is better for me. Most people who love Eric Lang style dudes on the map, major minis games, I think most of them like Blood Rage over Rising Sun. I am in the smaller category of liking Rising Sun. I think what makes Rising Sun so cool is the combat mechanism, the auction mechanism. I have 10 coins, you have 6 coins, I have 3 mercenaries, you have 1. What are we going to bid behind our screen? Am I going to bid, you know, higher on mercenaries or higher on this or that? And it's not as predictable as many other cool combat systems that start off cool, like Cry Havoc. Like, oh, it's a real cool combat system. And after a while, I'm like, yeah, it's still pretty predictable. Yeah. Like, I feel like in Rising Sun, especially because the loser gains the coins from the winner. So now in the next combat, because there'll be 7 or 8 combats in a round, that person's in a stronger position against maybe the same opponent or someone else. So for me, that's what sets it apart, is that coin auction secret bidding on combat bonuses. Models, of course, are amazing. Rules are simple enough. Definitely not playable at 6, even though Grant has tried it at 6. I think he will like it a lot more at 4 if he tries it. Rising Sun, my number 3.
Nice. I like that more than Blood Rage. I need to play it, though. But
Rising Sun was designed, as we said, by Eric M. Lang, artist Edgar Skomorowski and Adrian Smith, published by Simon Limited. You know what? I'm going to mention a game. I keep forgetting. I really love Tea Dragon Society. Mostly because the game is adorable. I have played it with Zephra. It's a card game. It's
it's my first deck builder.
It's my first deck builder. It's so cute. I really love the art. And Brant got me the graphic novel comic book. It was based on for Christmas, and I liked that too. So, yes, Tea Dragon Society.
Sounds interesting. I'm confused, though. I thought the Minion was your first deck builder. I still nice. Haven't played it.
That's right, yeah. No, I think like in the same way that you would teach people a drafting game with Sushi Go, you would play Tea Dragon Society. So you play it with your family, you play it with people for the first time, and the art is wonderful. And the game, it's totally a solid game. In the way that Sushi Go is a solid game, it's just very simple scoring, very simple.
I'm pretty sure that's the game at PAX Unplugged. Silas got all giddy about getting his copy signed by the guy who was there, and then he was going to buy a plush. Pretty sure that's the same. Because at PAX, they had a different box.
Yeah, it was white.
Yes.
Silas was all over that game. He likes that game a lot.
Nice.
I like it too. Well, Tea Dragon Society was designed by Steve Ellis and Tyler Tinsley, artist Josh T. McDowell and Katie O'Neill, publisher Renegade Game Studios. All right, number two.
All right, my number two is a game that I played a long time ago. I laid it out on the floor of our first place we rented, some place we rented, and you had to cover everything to play it in two-player, and now they made a new edition of it. They kickstarted Roxley Games, kickstarted it, and made it gorgeous, and even made a new edition, and this is Brass Birmingham, if I'm going to pronounce it correctly. And it's just great, and I'm definitely in the wagon of Birmingham is better than Lancashire. Like, they just updated, and I would play this one all the time, and this is the one I have. I don't have Lancashire. Well, I technically, you have Lancashire.
He pointed to Brian.
I pointed to Brian, yeah.
I also have Lancashire, but the new version.
It was funny, because I was making my list, I was like, I don't know if it's a different game, but I want it to be on there because the point of a top 10 list should be to tell people about great games. And this is a great game. Brass has always been a great game. I've loved it for 10 years. Not quite when I first found Board Game Geek, but somewhere in those first couple years of using Board Game Geek, it was in the top 10 of all time. And so we tracked it down and played it and just absolutely adored it. And then people didn't want to play it with me because they wanted to wait for the new edition to come out in the last like year and a half, 2 years. So now that it's out, people just went crazy over it, and I think it's well-deserved. It is an awesome game.
Well, I'm going to take this opportunity to say my number two game is Brass Birmingham. And it really was in my number one. Like, I fought between one and two on Brass. I mean, it is so good.
Yeah.
It is clearly in my top 10 of all time. I'm confident of that. Great game. You really think it's a heavy, heavy game, and it really isn't. And I know I'm saying that, so I know Brian will remind me that, you know, but it really, other than, you know, maybe burning your brain on some mathematical decisions and efficiencies, the mechanism of the game is not that complicated.
Yeah.
You know, but such great thought, and I feel like every game is different. You know, and it's not always like, is this the best strategy? Like, empty these real quick in round one, and, you know. So I really think it's great. I agree with Brian 100%. It is Birmingham is hands down better than Lancashire. So Brass Birmingham is my number two. And unless it's Brian's, as he hasn't played it, now Kathy can go.
I also really enjoy that game too. So just thought I'd throw that in there. Brass Birmingham was designed by Gavin Brown, Matt Tolman, Martin Wallace. Art by Lena Cosette, David Forrest, and Damian Mamoliti. Publisher, Roxley.
Nice. Let's see, my number two, another Gen Con new game. So Newton is my number two. Kind of
Newton.
Strengthened by some plays after the fact, after Gen Con. I'm liking the variability. I guess I could see it getting a little repetitive, but it's my number two game of the year for now. We'll see again. A few of these could rearrange a little bit, but that's right there. That's locked in. And I want to play it. I know it's on one of your lists, Larry, right?
It's on one of my 10 by 10. And it's actually, it's funny. Coimbra and Newton were the two games I only played once, and Newton was in my top 10, then out of my top 10, then in my top 10.
You didn't break the rule for that one.
So okay. You can only have one rule.
So, yeah, Newton, my number two.
Kathy was not a fan of
it. I couldn't stand it. Sorry. Newton was designed by Simone Luciani and Nestore Mangone. Artist Clemens Franz, publisher Cranio Creations. I'm going to throw another game in here before we get to everybody's number ones. I also really enjoyed the game Peep Moths.
Peep Moths.
Love Songbirds.
This game, so we haven't been able to keep it. We've owned it.
That's right.
Like two or three times already, and we just keep giving it away. But
keep giving it to people.
It's really fun, and it's pretty, and it's enjoyable. It's easy to learn, easy to play, but it's just a fun game, and I like it a lot.
And there is a copy in Croatia, right?
There
now.
Is a copy in Croatia. Yeah, we sent it.
That is a great game. It really is.
Yeah, that's a great filler.
Did it count? See, I didn't realize it counted as 2018 because I thought it was Little Dickies, right? Was it remade or what?
No.
Am I, no?
No, that's just the name they gave to it. Did you say the designers?
I didn't yet. No, I was waiting until we were done commenting. Peep Moths was designed by Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle, artist Clemens Franz and Mike Langman, publisher Lookout Games.
Do you want to give us the order that we should say our ones in? Are they predictable? Are they not predictable? It doesn't matter. Why don't you just decide?
Yeah. Let's start with Larry.
My number one game, I'm disappointed, it is on everyone else's list, but they did not have it as high as I thought they would.
Nor does it contain marbles.
Nor does it, but it contains tiles.
Ah!
Teotihuacan.
Carcassonne.
my number one game of the year, and I am desperately waiting for my copy to come in that I pre-ordered through Eric. So Phil has your copy, and Eric has my copy. Great game. I think you hit the nail on the head, Brian. It's just it's the way the dice work and landing on other people's dice and the decision making. And again, some games you could play any theme, but this theme just makes sense for this game. It really feels right, especially with the pyramid of I don't know if they're Mahjong tiles, what you would call those as you build that pyramid. But I really like the game. It was not overhyped. I think it was so hyped that you thought it met expectations, but meeting high hype expectations is very good.
Sorry.
I look at movies like that, right? If I overhype a movie and then it's still a good movie. But Teotihuacan, my number one, your number seven or something, and Brain's
my
number
seven.
My
is four.
Yeah.
Seven and four and one. So
not bad. Is that on a list for you? For this year?
No, only because I don't have it. I need to have the game to put it on a list. Now, if I ever get my copy, it'll make its way onto a list.
Nice.
So.
All right, next we're going to go to Brian.
All right. So, my number one has been mentioned. Coimbra was one. So, you got the order right.
Coimbra.
Sorry, Brian. You can say them all from now. So, that one is my number one. I know it would not have been my top game if I hadn't, like, the last play that I had of that game was going, that pushed it in to my number one. I'd been kind of low on it after, like, a couple plays. It felt a little repetitive. It didn't seem like there was a lot to change it up from game to game. But then the last one that I did play gave some incentive to do other things and try something new. So I think that's what really did it for me. So it is my number one.
Nice. Do you guys know my number one game?
Well, it can't be.
Hasn't been mentioned.
That's
by
why
you
I
multiple
ended
times this year.
It's been mentioned by me multiple times this year.
Does anyone else like it?
No. Yes, Kathy likes it.
I do like it.
Kathy likes it, and the Murph Brothers like this game. And Crystal Pisano likes this game. And Game On Chips and Giggles hates this game.
Have I played this game?
Yeah, you played it with me at 5 in the morning. So my number one game this year is Castell. So Larry gave me the face. Yeah, and so we had a vote for our, like, Connecticut. I don't want to take away from other groups in Connecticut, but I just think of it that way for people. But it's Game On, Chits and Giggles, and we had, like, a vote for best game of the year. And man, like, did I get hammered for voting for this game. Like, nobody voted for it but me. But it makes sense in my list here. Catalyst, Detective, Heroes of Terranoth, a lot of these weren't on other people's lists. So, Rise of Queens, a lot of people did not like that as well, so... But man, do I love Castell. I love this game. I have reaffirmed, I've played it many, I think like 5-6 times this year. Always so good. Castell is a game about Castellers, which are people that build human towers. And you're traveling around southern Spain. And the part I love is every turn you pick up two more people for your team. And you don't spend people to build towers. You just keep them. So every round your tower is getting better and better and better. And it's a Euro, so it's all laid out. This is how you're going to score. It's really key to score big at the end. And it has the, what's the circus, gladiator circus game? Colosseum? It has the Colosseum scoring mechanism where only your best score counts. So you have to beat your previous score. And then there's also some other things for scoring at the end. And so you go to the competitions. I just love it. I love putting that all together. It's like a big puzzle laid out. You're trying to figure out what you're going to pick up. There's not a lot of randomness. It's just who comes out of the bag. You can see how all the things... I don't like the advanced mode. The advanced mode is like there can be a region that has nothing or you can't gain a bonus. But in the regular mode, it's like in all regions, you can gain this bonus. You train to be able to do different things. It's solidly medium. It's just a little, like, it's just got a little bit of a learning curve for what the rules are for building towers. Other than that, the game is really simple. Really medium. And yeah, there's a lot of people that don't like it, but the Murph brothers like it. So that's what counts in my book. It was their number one game of 2018 as well. So
I only played it the once.
Yeah.
It was interesting. So I think good. For me, what was killing me is in the world of dexterity games and tower building, we're building a tower with flat pieces on the board and it takes up. I would love to
but
see.
But it's not a dexterity game.
But I'd love because to see wooden pieces.
He doesn't want to play one. Gotcha. Isn't.
He wanted Cool Mini to make it and then he had to stack a little.
Right? It's a game I just bought today. It's a stacking game. So
fun. Cool. Go ahead, Kath.
Castell was designed by Aaron Vanderbeek, artists Osi Haikala, Gene Torres, Paul Tseng, and Dan Wagner, publisher Renegade Game Studios.
So I think if you were to take our list, Root wins, right? If you were to add up how many times things have appeared in their order.
Yeah, that's only because Brian didn't play Brass.
True.
If he played Brass, it would be his one or two. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm not worried about that one. And that's not even... I'm not even hyping it. I just know he's going to like it.
You want to briefly mention games that didn't make our list but were close?
I just have some special awards or whatever. So
is that what I just said? Only fancy.
Well, these wouldn't... Anyway. So, actually, with all the work with the Dice Tower that we do and all the connections and all the times I see Tom Vassell in a year, I finally played my first game with Tom Vassell this year, and it was Good Critters. That was the first time I played a game with him. I just wanted to mention The Estates. It's so good. I guess I thought of it as Neuheim being reprinted. That's a tricky best reprint, though. Like, The Estates is not going to win awards for best reprint in the long run because way more people are going to play Brass. But that's a crazy year for two games reprinted, but The Estates is really good. The best game I played, like, kids game that I played, we played as the family, was Stuffed Fables. Was so good. I know Zephyr really liked that, and I'm excited for Comanauts to come out to kind of, like, bring it to, like, an adults-only crowd or whatever. And my absolute guilty pleasure game, I think, came out this year, and it is Villainous. I love Villainous, but I totally understand why people don't like Villainous. Like, it can be slow, and you have to figure out what's going on, but I have a blast with Villainous. It is like that Disney...
I considered that it wasn't like it's 10 worthy, but
it's kind of brutal with 6. We played it really fast, but you didn't know what was going on.
Right.
So you have to decide, do I want to just play it and everybody's playing or whatever? But if you've got, you know, 3 players, again, that's another one that probably 3-4 is like kind of the good wheelhouse. Even 2, because you just attack each other, which is great.
It's got great production.
Oh, yeah.
And it, yeah.
That's me.
So are we going to the other, our special awards?
Yeah, your special awards.
No, there were a couple. So Castell, Underwater Cities, those were two that I had played just once. So those were close, but I didn't feel comfortable putting them in there. Illusion was another one that I've had that's worked really well for a bunch of groups. So that's up there. I know it's a little lighter than all the other stuff, so it's, I don't know. I guess it didn't feel like a top 10 game for me. But then there were a couple that were from, on BGG, they were from a different year. So like Heaven and Ale would have been probably my number two.
I thought of that game too.
And Paper Tales would have been probably my number four as well. So those were two that were like solid that got released in the US this year. But you know, with the dates and everything, I know in like 10 years I wouldn't remember, oh, that was a 2018 game, even though it's listed as 2017, right. But all that sort of stuff. So
Paper Tales was on mine too.
Yeah. No, it's solid. So.
And honestly, if you had said Underwater Cities counted as a 2018 game, it would have been on my list.
You said it was 2019?
Yeah, so.
I think it's officially 2019, right?
Yeah, I it's hard. It's Rio Grande 2019, and it, you know, we got it in 2018 and got to play it. So it's like a weird spot of how we did it. But I figure, especially with this retail end, it's going to retail at our store in 2019. But it would be my number one game.
And that will be on our list next year, probably.
Yeah, it'll be my number one game of 2019. Spoiler.
Unless, hello, 10 games better come out, which would be awesome.
10 for 10.
Or unless I liked Fleet the Dice Game better then.
Is that, no, that's 2018.
Yeah, I guess Underwater Cities would be 11 out of 10.
Yeah. Also, I would say Keyforge is not a gimmick and The Mind is a game. Just to get in on those arguments for this year.
You made fun of my Carson City card game. It was originally 21st on my list. Made it all the way to 10.
Also, staring at it?
With some gunplay.
It bumped Betrayal Legacy, which I will tell you is very solid so far. I've played two plays of it. Really like it. It's not regular Betrayal because I'm not into that. The story of this game feels really...
You're not into regular Betrayal?
No, I'm really not. And then what number 8 on my list got bumped off my list was Feudum. I really like Feudum. I know it's really heavy for some people and cumbersome. I love the look of the game. I love the art. I love how the game plays. I have all the expansions now. I haven't played the expansions yet. I'm excited to see how that...
That is another game that would fall in the mechanisms category. The
awesome mechanism.
What are those things called? Guilds. The guild house mechanism? That should be another game. Let's take that, put it with Wendake and the scoring from Ray Colt. We got to get it.
And then lastly,
I called all those designers getting together.
Lastly, a game that Brian actually liked, which surprised me he liked it, that was close. It was 11 on my list. Australia.
Oh, it's great.
I love that game. Australia. It was close to making my list, and it surprised me how good that was.
Yeah.
And it gave you that Cthulhu theme without giving you the Cthulhu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Theme,
right? Without it being overwrought.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, Cthulhu can attack me, but I can still play a game.
Right. And let's be honest, Fleet the Dice Game, it's really good for a roller night. Like, it is awesome.
Yeah, I'm counting it 2019.
Are you? So it might be on your top 10 for 2019.
That's right.
I think we're going to play it after the podcast so Brian can jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
And go rolling down the street, Fleet the Dice Game.
I would play it again.
And I'm pretty excited for Wingspan, because Kathy doesn't like Terraforming Mars because of space, but Wingspan is birds.
Yes, and just so everybody knows, I did pre-order it because of Brant. He does that to me at least 8 to 10 times a year. He'll text me a game or tell me a game. You want to get that game? Yeah, I'll get it. But I did look it up. I watched Rodney's playthrough of it. He does such a good job. It's gorgeous. I love that every bird.
Did you
unique.
Say Rotto or Rodney?
Rodney.
Rodney.
Oh. Rodney did a
teach.
Thing. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So good. Looks awesome.
This is going to be the year that Kathy and I beat Gloomhaven.
Oh, yeah, we got
to 50 scenarios in. We've got to be within 10 of beating it, so this will be the year.
When's the expansion coming out?
Yeah. It got delayed again.
So what, 2020?
2019. It's coming out. So. Forgotten Circles.
So you're beating it this year, including the expansion or not?
Then we got to start over with new characters so we can unlock the other characters. So
yeah,
we've got a lot of work to do.
We have a lot to do.
So do we have three games for 2019 already on your list, Brant? We think Underwater Cities, Wingspan and Fleet the Dice Game?
Oh, I'm not putting Wingspan. I anticipate it. I'm excited for it. I have no idea. I expect it to be good.
But you pre-ordered it, not me.
But yeah, so this Underwater City is going to be hard to beat. What you said was actually pretty exciting. Like, 10 games better than that game. This will be an awesome year. So,
but I think 2018 was an awesome year. As I'm looking at all our lists, there was more games I wanted. I wish this was like a 25 list, but
yeah.
I know that's ridiculous. But there was enough good games in this list that I think make my collection, and like I want to play again.
I think I had 27 or 28 last year, so if you want to go by that, like metronome or whatever, which you can't because that's counting time, but like if you want to measure by that, then I understand where people are like I could narrow down the games that were great this year in a little bit comparison to other years, but if there's great games, there's great games, and like we're saying, it's kind of getting to the point where it's like, I don't know that I want to keep playing new games. This is actually the year where Brian is less my guinea pig to play all the games, and Kathy has played way more of the new games with me. So Kathy probably has similar plays to Brian this year because she's played a lot with me here. So in terms of new games, so it'll be interesting.
What kinds of games are you hoping to see more of this year or less of? Like, I would want less space games personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think. The one spot there wasn't a lot of great games was like the really heavy Euros. So we're going to see On Mars, the Vital Lacerda space game this year. And I think that's really going to...
Well, City of the Big Shoulders.
Because Lisboa did really well. City of the Big Shoulders is this year. So I think some of those heavier games should come out. And I think that was a little bit of a void. So I know in like the heavy game crowd this year kind of got shunned. Because it was, you know, it was kind of did you like Newton, Wendake, Underwater City, whatever, those kind of were the games.
Well, it's funny, in 2017, I felt like there was a lot of trick-taking games that came out, and this year I felt there was a lot of roll-and-write games that came out.
Yeah, roll-and-write, there was like 117 or something.
Right, so I'm curious next year if there's a new theme that overtakes. I mean, there's always minis games, and there's always dice games, but I'm curious to see what new thing might come out that...
Yeah, I haven't seen a ton popping up in distribution yet, but I don't know, it's still early in the year. I guess I'm kind of, I want them to pause with any legacy type of game so I can catch up and do all the ones that I haven't played, but there's nothing that jumps out. I mean, yeah, like some heavy stuff would be good, but I don't know, I had a great time with a lot of different, like, you know, party games were great this year, you know, and... I don't know, it was tough. I split my list into, like, you know, that top 10 with a couple honorable mentions. Then I had like 25 to 30 games that were like close, but like I didn't think they were going to be in there. And then I had about 25 games that no chance of being in my top 10. They are even like in the discussion. So it was kind of a mix with that. It was definitely divided kind of, you know, pretty much down the middle for those extra ones. So I think I'd love to get the top 10, like my 10 games played, you know, a few more times as well, and just get it all together. So,
and there's one game that none of us have played that we want to play that I think would have made our list if we played it, and that's Rise of Fenris.
Yes. Well, it'd be an expansion. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think
that's one we really
that's
the side to the table. That's the legacy side, which side is
not legacy. It's a campaign. Or it's just you can open
it
and play with it.
Is campaign that much different than legacy, though? I guess a little bit. It's not perfect.
It depends on if you're throwing things away or you can't get access to some things. You don't get to see the whole game.
Yeah, but I'm excited. Scythe is probably my number one game of all time, so I'm excited.
Spoilers!
Spoiler, probably. I mean, there's other... Oh, and Dinosaur Island. I should have mentioned that. That was close to making my top 10.
Dulosaur is better than Dinosaur Island.
I haven't even seen that.
Gonna talk about that on my next podcast. So.
Do you have that?
No. All right. Let's wrap it up. Anybody got any last words? Cool. All right. This is episode 112, our top 10 games of 2018. I have been your host, The Brant.
Your co-host, Brian.
Special guest, Larry.
And other co-host, Kathy.
You know, we're going to coin special guest, Larry. We're just going to say
that. Can there be a card named after me? Good Critters, maybe?
Awesome. Till next time, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on January 6, 2019. Happy 43rd birthday, brother. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey, thanks for listening.